Broadcasting live from the Regis Business Center and office suites at Satellite Place in Duluth, it's time for Gwinnett Business Radio. Gwinnett Business Radio spotlights and highlights companies in Gwinnett County and the people who lead them.
And good morning, everybody, and welcome to this little thing that we like to call Gwinnett Business Radio here on Business Radio X. I am Mike Salmon, and my co-host is Stephen Julian. Good morning, Stephen.
Morning, Mike. How you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. How you feeling? How you enjoying the weather? It's starting to feel like winter now.
You know, I used to live in Montana. I just love having seasons, and I love that it's almost November, and I came in here in short sleeves. So it's got to get a lot colder before I start, you know.
Yeah.
Complaining.
Yeah.
Especially on the air.
Exactly. Well, we've got a great show today. We've got a full house joining us on the program today from Pro On Call Southeast. We're joined by Lee Miller and Alan Shirley from Biteworks and a program they're doing. It's called Operation Christmas Child. It's James and Kelly Willard. And from Park at Duluth, we're joined by the general manager, Jim Slagle. We're going to start with Lee Miller and Alan Shirley. They are with Pro On Call Southeast. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us all about Pro On Call Southeast. What does your company do?
Sure. We're computer geeks. And beyond that, we actually provide outsourced IT computer support for small and medium businesses here in the metro Atlanta area. You know, in terms of support, we've been doing this since 98, and really what we do is technology, but we really are relationship. I mean, we go in and we find out what businesses need, you know, in terms of just overall guidance and direction, and we make sure that technology is in alignment for that.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and forewarn you. I'm a Georgia grad. I don't know a whole lot about IT. Steven over there on the other side of the table, he's a Georgia Tech guy. He has somewhat of a clue. But in layman's terms, what are some of the problems you help companies deal with?
Sure, sure. You know, in terms of just day-to-day issues. So, hey, I can't get on ESPN or Facebook. You know, that's not one of them. But just, you know.
No, it is.
It is, yeah, to a degree. But day-to-day computer issues, making sure the servers are running. You know, what's this cloud thing and how's this going to help us out? You know, just overall IT support. We basically become the IT department for a lot of businesses here in the metro Atlanta area. And using outsourced IT support, it makes a lot of sense because a lot of these companies don't need to hire a full-time IT guy. They can come to a company such as ours, and leveraging a company like us, you can do it for less than an IT hire. You don't have to pay benefits. You don't have to do the W-2, all the taxes, all that good stuff. You don't have to worry about that. You just can focus on your business, and we'll take care of the technology.
And a step further than that is the aspect of the employee being there is one thing, but a lot of companies do not have the ability to pay a CIO, somebody to make business decisions along with the IT.
Absolutely.
And that's where we can get in there and consult what is appropriate for your business, not just, you know, we need some computers and they need to stay up and running. No, no, no. Where are you taking this business, and how does IT relate to that?
See, I like where you took that answer. You started with Facebook and ESPN, which I was thinking, my computer's running slow because when I try to minimize it, when the boss is walking by, it's so slow that he sees it, so I get in trouble.
Absolutely.
But then you took it to the corporate level, so I like that. So let me go to that second part. You talked about the CIO, and you talked about consultation. What's the sweet spot of business, whether it's size-wise or technology use-wise, that you guys are finding the best market for you? Not that you can't go smaller or larger, but kind of where's your sweet spot? And I'm guessing that in that spot, sometimes you almost have to educate them that they need you. So kind of open that package up and help our listeners go, ooh, maybe I do need to call these guys.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. You know, in terms of size, I would say there's not a typical, but anywhere from 10 employees all the way up to over 100 employees is a typical size. Annual revenue maybe around anywhere from 2 to 3 million all the way up to 30+ million. And just, you know, in terms of how we plug in for that, typically those companies don't have a an on-site IT presence. They don't have an IT person. They don't have someone. They may have someone that's a little computer savvy. In fact,
yeah, like that's how I got nominated. Yeah, oh, you went to tech? Oh, you check out our – and I'm like, oh, my goodness.
That happens more than you know. We end up talking to people who – they started off in that company to come in and be a broker or something like that. And, oh, you used to do IT when you were in your college years? Okay, great. You were dumb enough to raise your hand and say, I know a little bit about that. And so the best part about that is we are able to come in because that guy was given the director of IT position internally, but he knows very little about the – in odds and ends and the very detailed stuff.
Yeah, I know how to share a calendar on Outlook,
right,
director of IT.
And he becomes the guy who is the face of the money needed to support IT within the internals. Mm-hmm. So what we can do is consult him. Let him know, listen, let's roadmap out a solution with you. Let's make sure that it's appropriate for what you can budget for. Let's not get outrageous with our goals. Let's set some goals that are obtainable and be able to get those within the, you know, within the budget. Because if we don't do our job in that regards, that guy internally that we're trying to make look good doesn't.
And I think also a lot of times first thing you probably come across is fear, not only fear of, oh, my goodness, I'm going to break everything, but also fear of, oh, my goodness, you guys are going to cost who knows how much. So kind of talk about breakdown of cost. I mean, you start with consultation, so I'm assuming some of that consultation is, look, let's fit this in your budget. So kind of break that down a little more.
Yeah, you know, in terms of kind of how do we do this, and that's a lot of what we do is education, you know, is going in and saying, let's look at the business, let's open the hood, and let's figure out how this business works. And then once we do that, we'll make sure that technology is in alignment for those objectives and goals. So what we do first normally is an assessment. We'll go in and we'll bring in the propeller heads. We'll bring in the engineers. We'll come in and, you know, in terms of Alan and I, we actually apply some of that business consulting. We've got approximately 180 clients, and we see lots of different types of businesses and lots of experience in terms of how they run well, how they don't run well. And we're able to apply that in that network analysis. So once we gather all that data and we come back and huddle, we go back, we build deliverables, we figure out overall what's going on, and then we'll circle back around with the report and say, hey, thanks for letting us come in. Thanks for letting us look at not only the network but understand how your business ticks, and here's some recommendations that we prioritize, and we think that these actions will deliver ROI for you, that you'll actually, once you do this, you'll see efficiency, you'll save money, and over the long run, you know, you'll make your business run better.
And it's only through that analysis and that conversation initially that we do the interview process with the key figureheads of departments, CIOs if they are internally, you know, CFOs. They have by and large become the new CIO in companies because they want to make sure that budget stays under control for IT, because back in the before the economy went to, you know, everybody was going out of control, spending money on iron that they did not need, and then all of a sudden here comes this cloud thing. Figuring out whether or not a hybrid of those solutions is appropriate, and it's only through talking with where they want to take their business that we're able to accomplish that.
Absolutely.
We're talking with Lee Midler and Alan Shirley. They're with Pro On-Call Southeast. Lee, I see you're listed as president.
I am.
And Alan, your title would be?
I'm the champion.
You're the champion.
He's got the title belt.
I have a belt and everything. It's awesome.
Yep.
So who's actually between the champion and president? Who has the higher rank here?
It depends on the week. If he's closing the deal, he's got the higher rank.
That's right.
That's very smart.
He's got the belt, Mike. I mean, it all comes down to who has the belt, right?
That's right. You're a wrestling fan.
Yeah, that goes. Yeah, come on. We know that.
My best selling technique is when I need to close something, I go, "Let me tell you something, brother." You know,
you got to see him coming off the top rope.
Yeah,
incredible. Just the landing.
Do you shake the head and shake the finger?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, let me hear you over here.
So Lee Allen and Hulk Hogan also here with us today. I see you guys are located in Austell, Georgia, but I assume your clients are all over.
Absolutely. We're in West Cobb, but we've got engineers that are spaced around town. We've got clients as far down south as Noonan, as far up as Cherokee, and then Suwannee. And then on our side in the Douglasville area. So we cover all of Metro Atlanta.
Tell us about the history of the company, how it started.
Absolutely. So I started back in 98, hung out a shingle. My company name back then was Georgia Geeks, and we did residential support. So we went and made house calls and fixed computers and did that for a couple of years. You know, my accountant the first couple of years said, when are you going to get a real job, Lee? I mean, looks like you made $2,000 this year. When are you going to get a real job? So, you know, that really fired me up, and I said, dang it, I'm going to keep on going. So, you know, after year three, Geek Squad, Best Buy, those guys came out, and we were advertising heavily on the beginnings of Google and Yellow Pages and all that. And once their advertising came out, we exploded. We got tons of phone calls that said, are you the Geeks? And we said, yeah, we're Geeks.
So Best Buy basically bought out your name for like $10 million, and you're like a rich millionaire now.
There you go. You know, it's funny because we were just so similar in name, and we were in the right place at the right time. So our business basically quadrupled. We went from one guy, from me, to two guys, to up to, I think at the end, we were at six guys. So once we did that, a couple more years, and actually a company up in Cincinnati approached us and said, hey, we like what you're doing here. We landed a contract with this local, with this nationwide chain called Micro Center, and we want you to be the Geek Squad here in Atlanta for the Micro Centers. So after a couple of months, I inked a deal with them, sold my business, and we did that for another year, and I probably installed 1,000 TVs across Atlanta in terms of walls, fixed routers, did all kinds of crazy stuff. But you know, after that deal went away. The company I was with got merged, and then it also got bought out after that, and then it got basically moved to another company. And over the past couple of years, I went and bought the business back. So I took the Atlanta market back over, and here I am.
How big is the company now?
Right now, you know, in terms of size, we're right around 10 people. So I like the size we're at. I call us the Goldilocks size because there are big mammoths in our space. There are companies that have over 100 engineers. But being the size that we're at, we're able to care, you know, build that relationship, you know, go out to a client and say, hey, how's the kids? How's your wife? How's everything going? And we're able to have that type of relationship. Whereas if you're with a large IT company, you kind of lose that. So in terms of the size, we like what we are. And hence our, you know, motto is that we're large enough to serve, but small enough to care.
Where do you see yourself 5 years from now? I mean, what are the plans as you move forward?
You know, I like where we're at in terms of space. I'm not looking to become, you know, mega behemoth itco.com or whatever. If I continue to gradually grow the company, grow the business, and say we scale up to 20 engineers, that's great. I think we're still able to kind of keep in touch with the clients because I love to be able to go in, sit down with our contact and you know, just find out what's going on and catch up.
That's part of what we do as far as when we walk in the door to sell a client on how we do our services, because you can get somebody to fix your computer. I can call 1,000 different companies in the Atlanta area to do that. But what we promise and what we deliver is very unique. When a client comes on board with Pro On-Call, we assign a primary engineer that is assigned to them for the life of their account. Now, of course, you know, you lose people, there's churn rates, things of that nature. But that person has a backup. That backup is just as responsible to know the odds and ends and the intricacies of that environment as the primary. It is their collective job to go communicate that back to our help desk staff, guys who are the front line with when the stuff breaks, they pick up the phone and call. The people that answer the phone have to know what's going on in that environment. So it's a shared responsibility to make sure that we collaboratively educate internally and also externally to the client. Let them know what the process is. Develop that relationship so it is personal.
Absolutely.
So Mike asked the question about where you see the company going kind of size-wise, but let me ask you, being in an industry that doubles every 18 months and changes on a dime, what do you guys see for your line of work? Is it becoming even more consultative? Are you it almost sounds like you are parts of all the companies you work with because they don't have to hire an IT guy. They hire you, so it's kind of outsourcing. What do you guys see in the IT, and where is it going?
Sure. No, absolutely. We consider ourselves an extension of our clients' businesses. We're the IT department, and it's not really just IT. It's not, you know, computers and nuts and bolts. It really is business strategy because technology is so ingrained in our society today, in business. I mean, you really have to get someone, build a team, understand technology as best you can. And to do that as one person is almost impossible. But if you've got a team, if you've got a group of people, especially a company that sees this with so many clients across the board and are able to bring that experience, you know, that's where really, that's in terms of value add, what we're providing. You know, with the industry, it is changing rapidly, quickly. I mean, you know, you've heard over and over, cloud, 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 cloud. Yes, that's part of it, but it's more than that. It really is, how is my business, How is technology going to leverage? How are we going to leverage that? And whether it is cloud or whether it's, you know, yeah, we'll go put it out there on something, or we'll keep some of our data here, or should we do servers, or we've got sales guys in the field. How are we going to communicate? What about tablets? All that good stuff. We can go and help integrate that and establish that IT roadmap. You're here. You need to get there. You want to grow your business. Here's how technology can step in line with your business growth.
I think a step farther than that is to understand about our approach in understanding the business process is I have sat in front of people who want to talk to us about IT, and then I have looked at them and said, where's your pencil and paper version of your business process? I'm anti-IT when it comes to that.
What's because, a pencil?
Right? Exactly. Yeah. But the whole purpose of that conversation is to remind people that you are putting all of your eggs in IT basket. You're wrong. It's you've got to be able to keep the machine running regardless of whether or not I've worked at a company years ago back in 2002, engineering firm, that our email server went down due to an extended power outage. The battery backups did their job. They shut the server down appropriately. Everything was great. No data loss. But we had no email for the better part of 4 hours. People were packing up and going home because they couldn't send and receive email. I'm sorry, I think you have something more you can be doing. So reminding people that technology should not drive the business should complement the business, not driving the boat, not, you know, oh, the email server's down or the SQL server's down, we can't get to our data. Well, where's your pad and your pencil? That's my question. Get back to work.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, in terms of that, and those are questions that we broach, you know. Yes, email server on premise. Do I do this Office 365 thing? Maybe it's Google. I don't know. You know, so we can sit down, you know, with the client, figure out what's the best way, figure out that redundancy piece. Like Alan was talking about, one of the biggest things that we kind of hang our hat on is backup. Mm-hmm. You know, behind your people, the second most important thing of your business is your data. You need to protect your data. You need to make sure you have access to it, whether it's on premise, whether it's out there in the field. Those are things that we're looking out for our clients.
And have assurance on that backup. That's the biggest thing. We like to say that backups are no good unless you can actually recover stuff from them.
All right, gentlemen, for those that would like to find out more about Pro On-Call Southeast, where would you send them, and how can they get in touch with you guys?
No, absolutely. So check out our website, prosoutheast.com. That's P-R-O, Southeast is spelled out, .com. So check us out online. In terms of phone number, 404-388-6553. Again, 404-388-6553.
I hope everybody has their pencils and is writing the
right. Oh, phone number. Now I need a pencil sharpener.
Pencils down.
Lee Miller, Alan Shirley with Pro On-Call Southeast. Appreciate you joining us this morning on Gwinnett Business Radio.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Our next guest here on the program comes to us from Park at Duluth. He's the general manager. His name is Jim Slagle. Good morning, Jim.
Wow, good morning. I hope I can show the enthusiasm as these other two just did. Hard act to follow.
Passionate geeks. Passionate, I love it.
Passionate.
We know you're passionate about what you do, though, at Park at Duluth. As far as luxury senior living, you're the expert to explain what Park at Duluth is and where you're located.
Well, we are luxury senior living, but really we want to address seniors in general today. Seniors, there's going to be, in 4 years, the first baby boomers will be hitting 70, and that's pretty incredible. And I'm the oldest one in this room, so I'm looking around thinking, oh, these people may be taking care of me pretty soon. But really, seniors are... It's a group that has really been ignored in the past, but seniors today are more passionate than they've ever been about life. They're not living in the past. Most of them are living in the future. They don't think of being 70. They don't think of being 80. They don't think of being 90. I have a mother that's 104, and she still lives in her own home, and last week I went to visit her, and when I got up to her home, she was raking leaves, and she'd raked 8 large bags of leaves.
Wow.
And I can't quote exactly what she said when I asked her why she had done so much work, but it was along the line that, hey, you know, don't think you're going to put me in cold storage because I'm going to live to be 110. And that's really the thought of seniors today, is that we're living. They're looking for environments to move forward. And that's many times why a senior will pick a senior living community to live in. It's usually a life-changing event that has caused them to go to a senior living community. You know, it may be as simple as a fall. It may be as simple as losing a spouse or a loved one that you've been with for many years. It may be as simple as your children have gone away to other cities. You may be alone in your home, and yet you still have vitality. You still want to live. You still want to move forward.
Yeah, the term we hear a lot is active seniors, and that's true. Like your mom is showing us, she's an example of that.
Absolutely. I was at a convention yesterday, and it really struck me. Bob Kramer, who's an expert in the area, was speaking. Dr. Bob Kramer, he's actually got his master's degree in divinity, and he's saying the term senior is going to go away. We don't want to be called seniors any longer. I think of my father, who also lived to be 101 months, and he said that he was around when the term teenager came out. And how he always just hated that term. We tend to label people today. You know, we label our seniors, we label our teenagers. Those of you that are going through mid-age crisis, let's see, there's no one in here quite yet there. And people don't want to be labeled that. Oh, a bunch of hands just went up. But I still got you all on age.
Well, let me have you describe what a day is like at Park at Duluth, because, you know, some people are used to the old term used to be the nursing home. I used to live right next to a nursing home. They didn't have these Park at Duluths back, you know, when I was a kid. What is a typical day? What separates this from what people think of as a cold nursing home, quote unquote?
Well, I deal with 190 seniors in my community. 190 active seniors. And it's all over the board. I mean, I have a number of people that are still driving, have their own cars. I have one lady, I hope she's listening. She actually works at one of the antique centers, goes in every single day. She lives for that. Her husband is a physician. He's maintained his medical license. He still goes to seminars and stays on top of his game. I have another physician who's 93. She's a graduate of Vanderbilt University, and she and I speak in the hallway all the time. And I asked her recently, I said, doctor, I said, do you still maintain your license? She said, absolutely. She says, and I read continually. She says, I may have to go back to practice one day if I live a whole lot longer, because I don't know if I'm going to have enough money. And she's serious.
Wow.
But it's neat to see when you see someone who is 93, 94, 90. I have a 100-year-old in my building, and I see her walking through the hallway every day. She was actually in World War II as a nurse. Her story, she is an encyclopedia. She is a history book in herself. And they all have stories. Everybody has a story. And, you know, that old and right now, I've forgotten who wrote it. I think it was Thoreau wrote, old soldiers never die, they just go away. These people aren't going away. The day of watching our seniors going away has come to an end. You're going to see them more active in politics, which we're already seeing currently. You're going to see them more active in decision-making and the way their lifestyle is. And you're going to see people that are my age group, those that are going to hit 70 in a few years, you're going to see them making – they're not going to accept what has been accepted in the past. When the gentleman from Pro were talking, I was thinking, yeah, that's right in tune with what this age group is looking for and wants to deal with.
So Jim, when it comes to the Park at Duluth, obviously there's a lot of independence. There's a lot of activity going on. What's the gamut of services that are offered? Is it are they single homes? Is it apartments? And then how far up the assisted living ladder do you guys go?
It is all over the board. We have two penthouses actually at Park at Duluth that are over 2,000 square feet each. Our average apartment is approximately 1,000 square feet. There are 170 apartments in the building, which 25 of those are composed of assisted living. We really don't go beyond what we feel we can do in assisted living. There comes a point that when somebody needs additional care, we will work with them to find properties that will work in that area. So unfortunately, what's happened with the new Georgia regulations between personal care homes and assisted living homes, I think that really we're pressing the envelope on some of them. We are non-medically trained people. Even though we do have nurses on staff, I have one full-time master degree registered nurse, and I have six LPNs. We don't practice medicine in those buildings, and I think that's a big misconception. So when you have to have extra skilled nursing, that is when you go to a nursing home. But more people that have been living in nursing homes in the past really aren't requiring day-to-day skilled nursing, so they are able to live in independent assisted living.
So obviously going with the independent and going with the high quality of lifestyle at Park of Duluth, talk about some of the activities either because it sounds like you have plenty of people who go out and find plenty
Correct.
To do, and you're mm-hmm. in a great location to do that. But on site, what's available for that active lifestyle?
Well, we've just actually changed. We've done some inventory. We've done some surveys with some of our residents. We found out one of the key factors that they're looking for, two key factors. They're looking to stay fit. So we've just engaged with Heritage Healthcare, and they're actually doing exercise programs, wellness programs. They're doing up to 5 a day in the program. We have participation anywhere from 8 to 45 in those programs. The other interest is continuing education, continuing learning, wanting to expand themselves. I actually do a book club every single month in which I stay on top of contemporary literature. I literally purchase 14 to 15 of the most recent books that come out. Their favorite authors happen to be Baldacci and Patterson right now. But again, it's all over the board, and it is a learning experience. It's a learning experience for me, because as long as you keep – if you keep that brain continually working, your chances, even if you have a gene for dementia or Alzheimer's, the most recent study coming out of the University of Ontario says that you can slow that progression by 60%. And that's a pretty big statistic. So our goal is really to keep people active physically, active mentally.
We're talking with Jim Slagle. He's with Park at Duluth here on Gwinnett Business Radio. And they're located, by the way, on Peachtree Industrial Boulevard, right down the road here in Duluth. You talked about seniors, Jim, that may need more medical help, and so mm-hmm. they may not be a right fit for you. What about dementia and things like that, because that seems to be becoming more and more prevalent with our seniors, dementia and also Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah, there's so many varying degrees of dementia. There's so many varying degrees of Alzheimer's, and people put them into classifications. There are people that can live in independent and can live in assisted living that do have low levels of dementia, lower levels of Alzheimer's. They can still function. There may be times that they need to be redirected, but there's just so much in the medical society out there and so many medications right now that can really help someone prolong their life and have a good quality of life. So those people one time that would have probably, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, 100 years ago, would have been put in someone's basement, called and said they had senility. Those people are out functioning and living well today. And they're still human beings, no matter what one may think. They're human beings. They're still breathing. They still have a heart. They still have a mind. And even the most advanced person, which we don't have and I've worked with in the past, with Alzheimer's, they still know. There's still a lot there that can be found in that back brain. One of the most common uses is music. Someone who hasn't spoken a word in 3 years somehow can sing every word to God Bless America.
Yeah. So quality. That's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing.
I've been to your location. It's gorgeous. It's almost like a luxury hotel. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful facility there. So I know you're very proud of it. Talk about, if someone is on the edge, they're not sure if they're in. Usually it's the children that have a lot to do with the decision mm-hmm. as well, that they're part of the process. If they're deciding whether or not the time is right, I don't want people to go to your website and maybe look at cost or hear cost and be turned mm-hmm. off. But talk about the cost, because it's really all-inclusive. I mean, I understand the meals, and there's so much involved.
Correct.
And when
Correct.
You kind of compare all the things that you're paying now to what it would cost to be there, it's very comparable. So speak on that.
Well, the cost can vary. It can be as low as $3,300 a month, and I do have people that are paying well over $8,000 a month for the penthouse apartments. It is a choice that someone makes, and you have to look within your budget what you can afford. But if you really take a look at what you're paying in property taxes, what you're paying for maintaining a home, whether it be yard care, whether it be electricity, gas, at the end of the day, it really isn't much more expensive to live in an independent assisted living community.
And I believe if it's still there, you might even have a worksheet that is on one of your websites where people can actually print it out and add up all the bills they're paying and then compare it, and it actually does work out.
Yeah, those can be very commonly found. They can be found right online on. If you just search for a worksheet for comparison assisted living, independent living, memory care.
I was going to ask also when, because I help some of my clients with the funding of that. Are there opportunities for potentially long-term care to kick in, especially on the assisted side? Is that something that's available through you guys? And the other thing I was going to say is a lot of times people are, if they're moving from their property, a lot of times they can use that. You're allowed the one big windfall to pay into the last care you'll get. So what are, I assume that's part of the consultation.
Yeah, I would always recommend that someone goes to a professional financial planner, because I'm not a professional financial planner. I will tell you personally, when I started in the industry in 2000, it actually scared me. I watched a lady who came in with $750,000 in a building in Atlanta, and 9 years she was completely without money, and she had to go to a nursing home. She was 98 at that time, and she lived to be 102. So it actually scared me. I actually started searching out, and I bought a long-term policy. So I just did not want to be caught, and I would recommend anybody that has a family or that has any type of assets that you plan ahead a little bit, even though that cost may seem substantial up front. The end result, it doesn't take a lot of math to figure out how quickly you can go through your cash.
And Jim, I think this might be something you've shown a lot of passion. I think this might get you even more passionate. This is one of those topics that kids and parents sometimes have a hard time broaching. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a hard time broaching the topic of final plans with death and, mm-hmm. and things like that. But this is one, and I think it's because of the stigma of the past. Mike said he grew up next to a nursing home, and that phrase has negative connotations. Mm-hmm. But all they have to do is step on your property and say, times are changing. This is, we're really mm-hmm. talking about quality of life. So, you know, it's... Is there any time that's too early to start that conversation?
Is there any time too early to start that conversation?
I'm in the middle of my midlife crisis. I raised my hand. It might be a little too early for me.
Are you talking
about
for yourself?
Right. Well, the kids and the parents. I mean, there really is no time. There's no time like the present, right?
It has to be very comfortable. Because I had older parents, my mother was 40 when I was born, because I had older parents. These conversations took place very early on at our dinner table, and that, you know, that we are older, that, you know, we're the gray-haired ones when you're in first grade. And so I think, you know, I would recommend to people that you have those conversations right now with your children and let them know what your plans are. Tell them what your plans are, what you want to do. Don't be surprised when the time comes. Don't get caught in a crisis situation. And that's what I see so frequently, is that someone has taken a fall in their home. They say, oh, I'm thinking about moving to independent in 5 years, and then they have a fall in the home. Then they have to go to rehabilitation. The children know absolutely nothing about their finances, and sometimes they don't need to, especially if that parent can function on their own. But they get caught, then all of a sudden the children have – the roles reverse. The children are all of a sudden the children become the parent, and the parent become the children. Fortunately, I don't deal with that a lot at Duluth, but I have dealt with that in the past. And when you get to that point, it almost comes to the point that some people are unrealistic and they are in denial, and their expectations just can't be met.
Before we let you go, Jim, I mean, how full are you there? Is there a waiting list for folks that want to find, you know, look at moving into Park at Duluth?
We do have a waiting list. We do have some empty apartments right at this particular point. And the apartments usually that it goes in cycles. There are times that people want two-bedroom apartments. There are times that people want one-bedroom apartments. For some reason, right now, I have a fair number of two-bedroom apartments that are available. That cycle has just changed. I didn't have enough of those 6 months ago. I had a number of couples that were moving in. We're seeing more couples than we've ever seen before. But again, that's usually when you look at it, there's a specific reason for that. And usually one of the couples needs a little bit more attention.
All right, Jim, go ahead and give us where you're located and the contact information and where people can go to find out more.
Well, we're located on 3315 Peachtree Industrial Boulevard, right at the corner of Abbott Bridge Road, in between Abbott Bridge Road and Pleasant Hill Road. You can look at Park Communities. There are two of them in Atlanta, one over in Marietta, and, of course, the other in Duluth at parkcommunities.com. Our number is 770-662-888. You know what? I got to look up my number, 622-6880. Isn't that sad? 770-622-6880.
There you go. And let me let folks know it's Park at Duluth, and it's Park with a C, not a K in the word park.
Correct.
And the website you mentioned, parkcommunities.com. Again, Park Communities, and that's Park with a C.
Correct.
Great. Jim Slagle, Park at Duluth, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, our next guest here, or next guests with an S here on the program, from BiteWorks, James and Kelly Willard. They are a married couple. We've had James on before talking about BiteWorks, which, much like our first guest, is an IT-type company. But you're here to talk about Operation Christmas Child, something that you do as a couple that you kind of lead the effort. A great way to give back. Talk about Operation Christmas Child.
Certainly. Thank you. Thanks, Mike. Thank you, Stephen, for having us on.
Yes, happy to be here.
So Operation Christmas Child is a charity that's run by Samaritan's Purse, which is a Franklin Graham organization. And it's something that we ourselves within our company are very passionate about and are encouraging our partners, our team members, our friends and associates.
Everybody and anybody.
Everybody and anybody to come join with us. We started out, Kelly started out, my wife started doing this about this is about the fifth year, I believe.
Right.
And it's grown and grown and grown every year to the point where last year it took up an entire room in our house, the goods and supplies we were collecting for the shoeboxes. And it just would not fit in our house again this year. So we made it, we've adopted it ourselves within our company. And we have space available within our suite, which is within this very building, to be able to support that.
So, Kelly, break down what Operation Christmas Child is and basically what you do.
Well, Operation Christmas Child has a mission to provide children overseas, but also in the United States, with tangible blessings from God. So that is coming in the form of a shoebox gift. And I've actually brought one today as an example of what this organization puts into the hands of children. Children who may live in an orphanage or may come from a circumstance where they would not ordinarily have the opportunity to receive such special items, but more importantly, to be shown love and care, that these items represent something that they can hold on to and call their own. So in this box, which I have packed for an age 2 to 4-year-old boy, because there are age and gender categories that you can choose from. You select either a girl or boy to pack for, and then age 2 to 4, 5 to 9, or 10 to 14. And this box, I've put things that hopefully will bring a smile to this little boy's face. I have a soft blanket. I have a little stuffed animal. I have a pair of socks, a toothbrush, a little tube of toothpaste, some sandals, a washcloth, coloring books, crayons.
I see it looks like a little matchbox car or something. I used to love those as kids. And I think all little boys love that stuff.
Especially my son, Jared.
Yeah.
Jared is 2, and he actually comes with me a lot of times to buy these items. We hunt for deals all year long in our family as somewhat of a fun hobby, and he actually pulled these cars off the shelf for inclusion in this box. So we're teaching him at a young age the value of charity.
So Kelly, someone who's listening, it's not like they have to pack the box themselves and put all these things together. If they have 50 of the same item, that's fine. Your folks and volunteers will separate them and pack the shoeboxes.
Yes, one of the joys of my life is to have a team of OCC warriors, as I call them, surrounding me, my friends, family, that we craft things for the boxes, we shop year-round for good bargains, and so we are happy to receive what you have collected, and we take the packaging off so that product packaging does not litter the child's environment, and we will screen it for what is appropriate for inclusion and what is not. Keep in mind that children in America play with things like little army men that may be quite scary in a very real way to children in war-torn areas. So that's an example of something to not purchase and to not include. And we're happy to go through that for you. So when we shop as warriors, if we find pencils for 3 cents each, we buy as many as we can. So if you're a business listening or if you're someone that has a heart for that kind of super shopping, we would love to receive your items at BiteWorks. And we have a goal of packing 1,000 shoeboxes this year.
I want to mention that's twice now in this one show we've mentioned pencils. Which yes. We never, ever talk about these days.
Wow.
Yeah, twice in the show.
There are so many stories of yes. pencils being so important
because
to
we
these
don't,
children.
Yeah, we're so into the technology. We talked about it with our first guest. But, I mean, there are other parts of the country where they still need pencils and pads of paper and do it the old-fashioned way,
in
if you will.
In order to obtain basic needs such as yeah. schooling, they're not able to go to school because they're not able to provide their own school supplies for that.
I mean, even the box there, little sandals, which
crayons,
we would take. Yeah,
sandals,
we take a lot of that for granted.
Washcloth. So James, I was going to go back to you and say, because Mike asked the good question, if we don't want to put a box together, we could focus on one or two items, and you guys would take care of getting them in the boxes. But, and I'm going to put my hand up and say from experience, one of the cool things is trying to come up with as many things as you can to fit into one shoebox, so you can also do that. So I'm going to ask for your help. Where do I go? What do I do if I want to, if I'm not just going to focus on one thing and I actually want to put a box together, help me with that. Give me some advice.
Certainly. So the things that are really in need are going to be personal hygiene supplies, things that are school supplies and just useful things that can fit inside the shoebox. And as Kelly was saying, it's about having a variety of things, and it's about having things that are both useful and fun. So not only just the things that are going to be useful to them within school or for the sandals, but something to also bring a little bit of joy into their life. A small toy, something that's a safe toy. It's not doesn't invoke war memories or anything like that, because the areas they're going to.
So it's not just fun gifts, although that absolutely needs to be in there.
Yes.
So you do the education, you do the hygiene, you do personal supplies, but you make sure there's something. Because all kids need to have fun. All kids need to find something that
this
brings joy.
This may be the only gift that this child receives all year long. And so we want something to evoke a smile, something to evoke a sense of happiness. So anything that would bring delight to one of your children, they would enjoy.
So in one of the things I've always connected to with Operation Christmas Child, I have a nephew. He's now in college. Mm-hmm. And he grew up in Nebraska. And my wife and I... We sent him for his first birthday an Elmo doll. And for years, every picture that was taken, he was holding that Elmo doll. Yeah. And we didn't know. We just were like, yeah, Elmo, we got to like that. This was before we even had kids. And we always puff out our chest and go, yeah, man, we gave him that Elmo doll that was – and he still talks about it. Oh, yeah, I used to love that Elmo doll. And that is such a connection point, because if it's the only gift you receive – it's going to be your favorite gift. And so imagine things that we find at the dollar store, things that we find on sale that you know, and I always joke that when my kids were little, they enjoyed the box more than they enjoyed the actual gift. So it doesn't have to be anything elaborate. It doesn't have to be a Wii. It can be something as simple as a ball or as simple as a doll or just something that will bring joy.
A simple gift that has huge significance, that conveys the love of God, that conveys that this child is not forgotten. And there are stories actually of these children who sleep next to the box itself, or that always put those toys in that box. And they have saved this shoebox for years. And then this charity has been around for so long that these children have now grown up, some of them, and are now giving back and hosting. If they've come to America, for example, they're now hosting packing parties on their own and packing shoeboxes with their family. And they will still have the original doll on their dresser or something like that, because the significance is so huge.
Kelly, before we give the folks the information, so if they want to participate and help out, all the contact information, James mentioned that you started this about 4 or 5 years ago. What was the inspiration behind this?
Well, I have a love of hosting parties. I have a love of children. I have a love of all these things. And in some small way that has now become huge, the stars aligned during a time of grief and loss for me, where I needed to connect with something bigger than myself. So what started as something small, where I'd get together for fun, began to take on increasing significance as I myself needed something to smile about. And so I would pack boxes and smile, thinking about the child on the other end of the box, smiling because of something that I did for them. And I have now turned this into something that is just a fun hobby with all my friends and family. And one of the most loving gestures in our marriage, James has offered his company support and his space. And it has just spoken to my heart on so many levels. So as much as we talk about blessing other people, this charity truly does bless me.
And the goal for BiteWorks is, you said 1,000 boxes?
1,000 boxes this year.
Do you happen to know how big this is? How many boxes are sent? From across, because I also think we're not the only country that does this, right? This is Operation Christmas Child is a worldwide operation, correct?
Correct.
There are millions and millions of boxes from the United States, and I don't have the exact figure, but there's so many.
It's a lot. Mm-hmm. It's grown into quite a ministry.
Right.
Yes.
Very cool.
I think the Atlanta area is set to collect something like 80,000 boxes, and wow. ByteWorks hopes to contribute 1,000 to that.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Jim here from Park at Duluth. What do you think about this whole thing?
I'd like to go ahead and challenge my residents to participate with you this year.
We would love that.
Kelly, what I'd like you to do is come over and do a presentation to them. You're going to find that I have a very warm-hearted, charitable group of people, and we'd like to make this even more successful.
I would love to speak with them.
Okay. Let's set that date up.
All right, Kelly and James, again, it's Operation Christmas Child. ByteWorks is really behind this. Great stuff. We appreciate what you're doing. For those that want to participate, want to join, want to support this, where can they go?
So we are having our big packing party here in this very building, in our suite, on the sixth floor at on November 15th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's kind of a come and go as you can. It's not, you don't have to be there the whole time. But we're encouraging people. We're challenging
Mike
people.
Will be there the whole time. I'll just let you know.
Bring stuff.
Right. We're challenging people to bring things because we need people. We need volunteers to help put the boxes together. And we need people to bring items with them that can go in those boxes and can be part of that child's blessing.
What about the boxes themselves?
The boxes, yes.
Please bring empty shoe boxes that we can all decorate.
Absolutely.
We will have some on hand, but we'll need some more. And we would love to be able to have a station set up for children to decorate them and whatnot. So there are many things that you can look at the website, byteworks.com/Christmas, that you can see a list of critical need items and view our video and connect with the cause.
And if somebody wants to talk to somebody, phone numbers are there as well, that kind of stuff, or emails?
Correct. Right.
All right. So let's give that again. It's ByteWorks, BYTEWORKS, ByteWorks.com/Christmas.
That's correct.
Correct.
Thank you so much for joining us today and sharing this great stuff you're doing, and we wish you the best. And anyway, I think I've told James this before, anyway, we could support you at Business Radio X, let us know.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Steve.
All right. James and Kelly Willard with ByteWorks, but also here to talk about Operation Christmas Child, joining us on the program. Also, a big thank you to Jim Slagle with Park at Duluth, and our first guest as well, Lee Miller and Alan Shirley with Pro On Call Southeast. A big thank you to all our guests. A reminder that you can enjoy this program or any other of our other Gwinnett Business Radio programs anytime, day or night, 24/7, by visiting GwinnettBusinessRadio.BusinessRadioX.com. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter. You can also like us on Facebook. We're at Gwinnett Radio X. For Steve and Julian.
You know, Mike, this is normally where I make some corny comment, but talking about Operation Christmas Child made me think of my grandmother. Over 20 years ago, she first introduced me to Franklin Graham and Operation Christmas Child. Now, everybody put their pencils down and get back to work.
There you go. For Steven, I'm Mike Salmond. And for our producer, Trey, we'll see you next time right here on Gwinnett Business Radio.